It's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's a magic marker. A felt pen.
It's a mistake.
It's a trap.
It's a fucking comedy.
It's quiet. Maybe too quiet.
It's all happening.
It's a good day to die.
It's a good day to talk about movies.
Welcome back. It is a good day to talk about Andor, episodes 5 and 6. I am your host, Duncan. Joining me, as always, is Gardner.
Hey, welcome back, folks. Excited to get into these.
Yes, and if you guys were waiting for episode 5, we decided to do 5 and 6 together. So today we have for you a recap of Andor, episodes 5 and 6, both directed by Susanna White. Episode 5 is titled The Axe Forgets, and episode 6 is titled The Eye. Now, we decided to do this because after the first three episodes, it was very clear that episodes 1 through 3, as they were released on the same day even, were one chunk, an arc, if you will, within a larger arc of both this season and the whole 2-season arc that will eventually be completed when the series is done. But we've mentioned this before. We know that going forward for season 2 specifically, they'll be in 3-season arcs. And as we've watched, we're like, okay, it seems like they're doing that for season 1 as well. And I think that worked out at least for this week, because I think that knowing what happened in 6 is going to enhance our discussion of 5, hopefully. So if you guys hate it and wanted to go back to episode by episode, sound off, let us know. We're always open to suggestions, criticism, if you will, but we're trying this out. So there you have it, folks. We are about to get into our discussion of Andor episodes 5 and 6. Before we do that, here is your spoiler warning. Spoilers for Andor episodes 5 and 6, obviously, but also 1 through 4, of course. But on top of that, spoilers for anything Star Wars related. So episodes 1 through 9 of the films, the feature films that we all know about, those are up for discussion as well. We can talk about anything in those. So if you're worried about spoiling one of those that you haven't seen, turn this off now. Also, any of the quote unquote spin-off films like Rogue One obviously might get talked about, as Andor is a spin-off of that. But even Solo, we've touched on in prior episodes and other things too. So TV shows, live action or not. So the Disney Plus ones, anything like Bad Batch might get mentioned, or Clone Wars, back to when it wasn't on Disney Plus. So maybe even a Cartoon Network's Clone Wars reference. Who knows what Gardner will pull out of his bag. Anything, like I said, on the table that also includes comics, books, anything extended media related. So if you are worried about anything in particular Star Wars related being spoiled for you, this is your spoiler warning, not just for Andor episodes 1 through 4, not just for Andor episodes 5 and 6, not just for the feature films, but also any TV, live action TV and cartoon TV, and anything written down in a book, comic book, anything Star Wars related can be spoiled. Turn this off now if you're worried about that. That's your spoiler warning, folks. Time to talk about Andor episodes 5 and 6. We're going to start off with our initial thoughts broadly. Episodes 5 and 6. Gardner, what do you got for us?
Overall, I think I like this arc more than the opening arc, episodes 1 through 3. Episodes 4 through 6, I think they're very, very similar, and it's very obvious what they're doing here is they have episode 1 set up, episode 2 second act, you know, middle chapter, very beginning, middle, end, and then the third episode is a big climax. I just felt like there was a lot more tension and build up in this arc going from 5 to 6, specifically with 5 being basically entirely set up for the heist, and then episode 6 being the carrying out of the heist, basically from beginning to end, having some really rip-roaring action sequences, some really, really terrific character work and dialogue. To me, it just heightened everything that I already really liked about the opening arc, and it really bums me the fuck out that this show is not getting more discussion and hype online and in real life, because it really does feel like something that is made with love and high quality, and something that I really have always kind of wanted from this universe. And I just can't wait to see. Now we're at the halfway point in the season, we're a quarter of the way through the series itself, and I just can't wait to see how the rest of it unfolds.
Yeah, I've enjoyed this series so far. We've talked about that. I've been a little muted on my reaction just because I want to temper expectations, like I've said, but these were easily my 2 favorite episodes of the show so far, with 6 being my favorite over 5, which isn't a diss at 5 or even a diss, like I said, at the first 4 episodes, because I have enjoyed it so far. But this is definitely more what I felt like people were saying it was going to be, because like I said, I enjoyed the first 4. I'm trying to say that as many times as possible so that's clear. But if you listen to our discussion on 1 through 3 and then our discussion of 4, I was saying that I did feel like people were hyping it up a little bit too much, and this is more kind of in line with where I'm like, okay, to me it's a perfect balance of the away from the main aspect, a little bit off the beaten path of Star Wars, but also hitting the core stuff, both aesthetically and in the storyline. I was thinking during this, and it's not an original thought, but at its core, Star Wars is is really just a series of missions that are basically heists. I think pretty much every one of them can be at least skewed to be a heist in some sort of sense. This one is just straight up, they're stealing money. It's not a MacGuffin or anything. It's not a person. It's a heist to steal money. This is a straight up a heist. But I think it's kind of nailing what Star Wars is. It's also very similar to Rogue One, where that's almost, again, it's not money in that one, but that's a heist. That's what they're doing. They're breaking into a place. That's all Star Wars is breaking into places all the time. That's most of the things is that.
Constant subterfuge and disguises.
Right, exactly. And yeah, you're always got your main characters dressed up like the bad guys too. But so I think that's a good balance. Yeah, but really that's all I was feeling about this is good, fun heist stuff that is aesthetically well done, which people have said and we've agreed with and works with the Star Wars universe. So I appreciate that. It's nothing groundbreaking in the sense of what it's doing for the universe or, again, for television, right? It's a little groundbreaking for Star Wars, but not for television, like we've said. But it's obviously not trying to be groundbreaking for the Star Wars universe, like for implications on the story of Star Wars, because that's not what it's trying to do. And we've kind of praised it, as other people have, for doing that, for going off the beaten path, like we've said. But it isn't, I think, gaining the traction, like we were saying, online, and like YouTube people aren't getting as many views on their Andor stuff, and you don't see people talking about it on like social media, for example. But I think that's because it's kind of just chilling, you know?
It's a lack of glup shitto.
Yeah, yeah. There's a funnier glup shitto. I can't remember what it is, but someone did a similar joke to glup shitto, and like their fake name, I think, is so much better. I forget what it is.
I mean, some of the character names in Star Wars were great. Salacious B. Crumb.
Oh yeah, what's Sleazebagio?
Yeah, Elon Sleazebagano.
Yeah, there's some good ones.
Yeah,
but it's not trying to leave a cultural footprint as much, so that's fine. I think it is interesting because I don't know how Disney would feel about that. Like, did they know they were making that show? But either way, I don't say that as a negative on it, that it's not making that impact. But I'm just maybe giving it that benefit of the doubt to say that it's not because we don't care. Maybe, I guess, Gardner, in my opinion, maybe not like even saying that's the case, but I just think, you know, because it's not doing something where it's like, oh, this has implications. Luke is showing up and he's now we know where he was during this time period or whatever it is, or Ahsoka's showing up. So you're not gonna have people talking about, oh my gosh, nerding out in a way. And I don't say that nerding out in a negative sense, but just freaking out about that kind of stuff. But all in all, like I said, I think this is only getting better. 6 was even better than 5. 5 is, in my opinion, better than 4. It's this, like you said, 3 episode arc is, in my opinion, better than the first 3, and it's only getting stronger throughout. So good things going forward. And I think it's doing, like we said, well to establish itself both as being part of the same universe, but also being maybe more towards the outskirts of that universe.
Yeah, I think kind of what you're getting at is it's a lot more understated and confident in what it is doing. It doesn't feel like Tony Gilroy and his team ever doubted for a second what their vision was going to be for this show. So we didn't take a mid-season break to just spend time away from our main character and fuck off to a more popular character. You know, this is the story we're telling. We're set here and we're going to do it. And something that I really want to touch on about not having easily recognizable characters and the understatedness of the tone of this show is something that I really enjoyed in this arc was getting to know the cannon fodder characters and fleshing them out and making them three-dimensional. I feel like a lot of times in Star Wars, you know your main character is going to survive, right? And so they put all the energy into connecting the audience to them. And they have some side characters who are like, you know, have some personality quirks or whatever, and then they get killed off and you're like, oh, but I like the funny guy. But you didn't really have like an emotional investment in them. And for this arc, I felt that you really got to know the Aldani rebels. Nimic and Skeen in particular, I felt like Senta and Vel were like a little underdeveloped. But that was just something that really stuck out to me is in most other Star Wars media, they would have shown up, they would have given some really explicit dialogue about why they're there and what their intentions are. And then when they die, you don't really feel that much. You know, it's something that happens in a heist. I think that was really a strength of 5 and 6 was taking its time to get us invested in these characters. So when shit went sideways in episode 6, the tension worked. I will say episode 6, it made me think of Solo a lot with that heist, and Rogue One as well. Also, is like you said, is basically all Star Wars are heists. But the tension really worked for me and the pacing really worked for me because I had gotten attached to these characters over the last 3 weeks and they had realistic human dialogue and interactions with one another. And then going back and looking at 5 and earlier in 6, the twist at the end of Skeen wanting, just being ready to betray everyone, was well foreshadowed and made sense with the character that we had gotten to know over the previous 2. And that was something that I really appreciated.
Yeah, and that does feel like like something that's not a trope, but an aspect at least of heist movies, where obviously plan A is going to have some hiccups throughout the film. But once you get to the end, it feels like there's always one more twist maybe. And I'm saying that as a positive, like it's embracing its genre almost.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't feel like that's something that Star Wars is very interested in doing a lot, where it'll have an added layer almost, if that makes sense.
The only example I can think of would be Solo with Tobias at the end.
Yeah, there's Benicio del Toro's character as well, I guess, but that's really not hidden at all, I guess. And it happens very quickly. It's not a character that you've grown with throughout the film, but you're right. I wasn't saying that as, I was just brainstorming. I wasn't saying that to argue against your point. That was the only one. That is the only prime example.
No, I'm agreeing with you.
And it almost could get obviously could get overdone if you did it in every movie. And it is something that sometimes is like, okay, we don't need a twist, right? And I know I like twists and I generally find them fun, even if they can be sometimes stupid or forced. I just, it makes the movie a little more interesting to me. But in this sense, I think it actually would be kind of brave, is not the right word, but stepping out of their comfort zone a little bit to do that sometimes. And this felt like, again, I don't want to make it sound like the filmmakers of past Star Wars stuff didn't care or something exactly, but it does feel like they were, when they were creating this, they were like, all right, we're making the best film, quote unquote, or television arc that we can here. And who knows, maybe that will play in something bigger down the line. I don't think so. I mean, spoiler, he's dead, right? I guess I assume that he shot him dead. I don't know. But maybe we'll see him in a back to tank later on.
Oh, God.
But so I don't think that's going anywhere other than to just reinforce that, yes, Cassian will kill people. Even if it's all three that I can think of that stand out, you know, the opening of both the movie and the series and then this one that are just cold-blooded, are for a greater good, if that makes sense.
Well,
the beginning of Rogue One is a little the most cold-blooded, I think, but he was going to slow him down. They might both get caught, and then that does hurt the rebellion. I don't know if that's what you were. I didn't mean to cut you off there.
I would say those two are self-preservation. The beginning of this show is self-preservation, and the beginning of Rogue One is self-preservation because I need to serve this bigger goal. And this one, and that's like the hybrid of like the two murders we've seen so far. This one is, well, I guess there's still an aspect of self-preservation. That's the thing about Cassian, is he's not an entirely altruistic character, because he knows if they leave and like Skeen is going to try to kill him and end up taking all 80 million credits. So there's an aspect, I think, of that. I think he's realizing that, like, this guy's so craven he would do that. But I think it's also the betrayal of the cause, and just the betrayal, the being lied to by Skeen. And I think he finds that to be particularly repulsive. And that's kind of him shifting over into the larger cause.
Yeah, definitely. I guess, and I'm not disagreeing, but my argument, I guess, would be that if he wasn't on the mission to find his sister in that opening scene, in my opinion, this is just speculation here, what I'm about to say, if he had no mission, I don't know if I think that character, at least from what I view him as, is moral central. I don't think if, like, the only thing on the line is him going to jail and potentially dying, I don't know if he takes another person's life. Maybe if they're specifically straight up like a stormtrooper, I guess. But as we've discussed, they were a private contractor type security thing, which is probably a sketchy organization, but that doesn't mean that the guy who stopped you in the alley is inherently an evil person, right? Murder is murder. Like, if I'm walking down the street, like, even if I think this guy's an asshole to me, like...
Yeah, and he didn't mean to.
Right, and like, he gets knocked down and then it's that. But then the second guy, right, it is like, I don't trust the system here, I'm gonna have to kill you.
Yeah.
But I guess my point is, and maybe I'm wrong in this, and like, the people who write the character would know best, but my interpretation of what they're portraying is that I don't know if he cares enough about his life. Like, he is a survivalist for sure in general, but I do think that's because like, he's got a mission and he would like try to survive in general, I think, and like do shady stuff. But I don't know if I see him taking a life, even if it's again like a situation where it's like he's quote unquote morally justified, like he might not be the worst, like in the situation out of the two people, the him being the murderer and the murderee, he might not be the worst out of those two. Like, the person getting murdered might actually be a worse guy, but that doesn't make murder okay, is my point.
Yeah.
But I do think potentially, because that doesn't make murder okay, if only his life is on the line, maybe he doesn't care enough about surviving himself, unless he has a goal like his sister. Like, he cares more about his sister's life than this guy in the alley, for sure. I believe that. And at a certain point, it becomes, I care more about the rebellion and the inherent, like, if you're a superhero and you don't do anything, the lives that you could have saved are on you, even though you're not killing them idea, which, you know, that's a whole philosophical, like, is it your duty to protect people if you have the ability, whatever, that's a different conversation. But I think he kind of looks at it that way with the rebellion, where it's like, if I'm not helping out, like, especially, like, just look at this mission as a microcosm of that. If I don't help them out, these guys are screwed. They're shooting from the wrong side, this, that, and the other, you know. And he had already signed on for the 200,000, but at the same time, I think at a certain point he was like, all right, definitely these six or so people are gonna be dead if I don't help them out here, because they're just not prepared for this. That type of thing. something. If you know what I mean? Like, where I think the preservation is more for those around him, even if it's like not even someone that he actually specifically knows. And maybe I'm giving him too much credit. Who knows? But I think he is like more of a good-hearted gun for hire.
Yeah. And that may be in Nimick's manifesto. I think you're touching on something that is basically what Luthen was saying to him in episode 4, right? Where he's like, I think you put on like this exterior, this hard shell, but I think you're ultimately going to die fighting these bastards. And he's right. You know, he goes onto his last mission knowing that he's probably not going to make it off the planet. And he accepts his fate with stern resolve. I don't think he's fully there yet is the thing. And I think we're seeing that seed is in him, but it's so covered up in this kind of hardened exterior. And not that hardened exterior ever really goes away, but he allows it to like drive his actions more and more throughout his life. And I think that's what's interesting about the contrast between him and Skeen, like with their discussion in episode 5, when he sees his tattoos and he knows what they mean. And then he's, you know, been an orphan and he's been through the Imperial system and this kind of stuff. And so they're almost two sides of the same coin, where self-preservation is important to them. But for Skeen, it's much more selfish. He's the kind who will pull up the ladder behind him and say, fuck you, you know, make your own way. Whereas Cassian is, I think, a little more empathetic and does have some principles that he is fighting for. Like in the discussion around the campfire, where Nimick is telling him about his manifesto, and Skeen says, well, what do you believe? And he says, well, I know what I'm against, and doesn't really elaborate on that. And Skeen is a little more dismissive of Nimick's manifesto, and he's like, he sees oppression everywhere, and he has let that like hard exterior kind of affect his worldview. Whereas I think Cassian puts it on for a sense of necessity for survival in order to accomplish a larger goal. I hope I articulated that well. I don't know if you get what I'm trying to say, but I don't know how else I can put it.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. I think you're right. I do think his decision at the end shows that he is getting there, like you said earlier, for sure. I think he's further along than maybe I would expect it at this point after this. But I do think that he was swayed just by meeting those people and seeing their motivations, maybe understanding that everyone's fighting both a big rebellion and a personal one, which is something that was noted in, I believe that was 5. It may have been early in 6, though. Who knows? Doesn't matter. Obviously, we're talking about both of them at the same time. Who cares? But there was a discussion about that when we talked about how, was that about the stormtrooper, the Fae killing the brother story? I don't remember who they were talking about.
I think that was part of what flipped it, is because, like you're saying, he saw that everyone else had their own personal rebellion, and then to see that Skeen lied about his to try to, you know, ultimately just get some credits, I think that really like ethically disgusted him as well.
Right. And I guess because I'm not disagreeing with any of the things you said from what I said before, my whole point is just that I look at him as having those morals and ethics early on, just in the sense that I don't think he is the kind of person who would kill someone. Like I said, you know what I mean? I know I'm reiterating what I said there before. And I guess that's like the base point, whereas I think that he wouldn't just like kill someone over credits, for example. I think that's a good baseline that most people maybe would agree with. I don't know. Maybe, I mean, it could be a debatable point as well. But then to take it a step further, I guess I think he also, because yes, he would, and we've been shown that he would kill someone if it's preservation, for example. But my argument is that I think it's preservation of himself so that he can do something for others. And if he felt he had nothing to give to either his sister or the rebellion, because yes, he didn't have any caring for the rebellion until he was convinced by Luthen. But even though he didn't have any ties to the rebellion at that point, and I don't think would necessarily kill for the rebellion at that point, he would kill for his sister, and he's on the search for his sister at that point. And I think that's my point, whereas, like I said, if he didn't feel like he had anything to give to either his sister or the rebellion, I don't think he would kill the guard in the alley, for example. I think that that person is too tangential to the evil that he sees, because I think he has some sort of revenge, if that makes sense. Not the perfect word for it, but he got eradicated from his home, right? Obviously, and had to become a stowaway, which was the better option, probably. I guess we don't know if they ever got hunted down, the rest of them, but it seems like it was probably not great to be left with the others.
I don't know. He's kind of abducted by his mom.
Yeah, but I feel like she was saving him.
Yeah.
At that point, it was like, if I let him go, like, he will call it, because he's gotten stuck on here. So I don't think she's like evil for that, but yeah, it is like definitely like an abduction, I guess. But I looked at it like he was more likely to die on that planet, and probably a good portion of those survivors that were left when he got abducted, quote unquote, didn't make it, I think, like much further. Although we know, for example, his sister did.
Yeah, I hope we explore that. Right, because that's what I was going to say, because like, we know the sister got off the planet, so why did she have to leave the planet?
Right.
Maybe she was looking for Cassian. Maybe everyone else is still there, and she's just like, where's Casa?
Right, but so he does have some sort of revenge that he wants to take out on the bad guys in his mind, which, again, that's a very simplified way of putting it, but they're not exactly easy to put a face to at this point, because they are pretty early on still in developing everything. Obviously, we haven't gotten to Rogue One yet, we know. So anyway, all that to say is that was my point. I don't think it necessarily clashes with any of the things you're saying, but it just hinges on, do you think he would kill someone to preserve just his life? Which is, I guess my argument is that I don't think, based on what I've seen, and maybe it's just a hopeful outlook on him, because I do like him, and I think he's, again, well acted by Diego, definitely. But definitely just, I think that, my opinion, what I've seen so far, I don't see him doing that, because I don't think he just cares enough about his own life. Although he is, like we said, he tries to survive. But every time we've seen him, he's had a quote-unquote cause, whether it just be his sister or something more, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. And maybe I didn't articulate that perfectly, but like, in calling him a survivor, I'm not saying that in like a way that he's selfish and like he only cares about himself, but he has something to survive for. And I think that's an interesting parallel to Han Solo, who we talked about in our first couple episodes, where you saw a lot of Han Solo in Cassian. And Solo is the kind of guy who will shoot first, you know, scoundrel with a heart of gold. Cassian's case, a mercenary with a heart of maybe gold. I think so. He's not as overtly altruistic or quippy or at times warm and fuzzy, but I do think you can kind of trace their trajectory and arc in a similar way. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I've mentioned it before that I definitely see them as somewhat parallels, but here in this arc, I definitely felt so as well. I was definitely feeling that. I was like, okay, there's something to it for sure, which is not a crazy thought, obviously. They are a similar archetype, but definitely, I agree with that. I definitely see him as being of that class, although I don't know, actually, because from what we see of Han, I mean, he does, since it was originally just one movie, obviously, he does change over the course of, what, a couple of days or weeks, I guess. I don't know how long exactly. I haven't thought about it, how long the original Star Wars takes place over, like from when they meet him in the cantina to when he comes back at the Death Star.
I think it's like a week. Don't quote me on that.
Yeah, so like less than 2 weeks, probably, you know? That's what I'm saying. So we don't have to say weeks. We could say a weekish is probably around the time period. I'm sure someone's broken down. There's definitely threads on that. But anyway, you really want to, we'll talk about episode 5, the time period of that one.
Oh, God.
Anyway, the point is, I was thinking about, you know, how long it takes. And obviously, we're getting a series here with Andor, so we're getting more time to flesh that out. But, you know, even in Rogue One, his original feature film debut, we see him come around a little bit from being more laissez-faire, maybe, about things. I feel like he's a little detached at the beginning, right?
Yeah, a little more, right, because he's gone through all the stuff that we're going to see in the show. All the subterfuge, betrayals, secret missions. So at the beginning of Rogue One, he's hardened, he follows orders, keeps secrets, you know, need to know kind of basis. He's not the Cassian who is asking, what are they doing? And who are you? And I need to know what's going on here. You know, he's like Vel, where it's like he's telling Jen, like, I'm telling you what you need to know, and extraneous information that you don't need, I'm not going to give to you.
Yeah. So in general, though, I do definitely agree that the characters have parallels, although Han's not a not serious character, but there's less quips with Cassian for sure.
Yeah.
And that's not a positive or negative one way or the other. It's just that is probably the biggest difference. Cassian's not going to be hitting on the princess. You know, he's very subdued in that sense. Han was definitely a little hornier. We'll say that. And it's funny though, because like they're both a little bit lone wolf-ish, but this is almost the before we meet Chewie and Solo, I guess, version, because we haven't met K2SO, who will become his Chewie type partner, which is, I guess there's something to be said about it being a droid versus being an actual living being, maybe. I don't know. It is a little more closed off, I think, would be maybe a way to describe Cassie as opposed to the Solo. Not, I didn't even mean his name there, like being a loner type person. And I wonder if that's how he got his name. They should put that in a movie.
Yeah. Should we have like a really obnoxious line of dialogue about that?
But although they're both loners, I think that Cassian's more closed off and more spiteful even towards the Empire.
Yeah, I think Cassian cares more. Like, I think Han was happy to just kind of fuck off and like fly under the radar and smuggle shit.
Yeah, get my money.
Yes. And Cassian is about his paper, for sure. He's about his credits, but I think he's more angry. He's pissed at what the Empire has done and the life he's had to live.
Yeah, so it's almost a fun, not a twist, but that's the best word I can think of, on the character of Han Solo. It's definitely, like we said, similar, but I don't think in a bad way. I think in a way where we're almost seeing a different version of this type of character, like I said. So, yeah, I mean, I like it, and I've been bringing up Han Solo, I think, since the first episode. Like I said, he's my favorite character from the original trilogy as well, so.
Right, and when you have a lone wolf, shoot first kind of character in Star Wars, that they're going to get compared to Han, inevitably.
Yeah.
You were talking about K2 earlier, and I saw a fun fan theory online that they think that K2's personality is going to be a result of him being programmed with Nimix's manifesto, which I think could be interesting. Not that I really think there was that much of a... That was one thing about the episode, was like, I really didn't see that much of a connection between Cassian and Nimix. I think it was kind of one-sided. Cassian was there, and Nimix just thought he would be like someone that he could kind of convert to his political philosophy. Yeah, but I just didn't see much of... I didn't really see that being reciprocated so much from Cassian's side, but maybe subsequent to Nimix's death, he admires the sacrifice sacrifice.
Well, I think you're not wrong there, but I think that's because it was like a mentor-mentee type situation. It was almost, and this is the dumbest comparison to make, but Tony Stark's always giving Peter Parker shit, you know? And it's like, oh, like he doesn't mean it. And that's also Tony Stark's personality, obviously. But it's kind of the, no, I'm the vet here. I can't be too buddy-buddy, like gooey with you because I got to show you, not in like a masculine, manly way, but if he jokes off or like becomes too emotional, for example, with someone, then it almost could hurt. They're in a war. They're fighting a war. So I think that might be, and I'm not saying emotions are bad or anything. I mean, I've never fought a war, so I don't know if that could get you killed out there. I'm not going to give anyone who's a soldier any advice here, but I digress. But my point is, I think it's almost, he was trying to play it cool, but not in a like, oh, I'm like the cool guy way, but in a way where like, it almost felt like that's what the character needed because he looks up to him and he sees him as that kind of character. So it's like, I'm going to be that guy for you.
Like an elder statesman kind of, like I have experience, not necessarily like knowledge that he needs to teach him, but he has like experience that can be gleaned for lessons.
Right, yes. And on top of that, I think that maybe there was a little bit of a switch when we had Cassian behind the guy who was pointing the gun at his head. And then the woman comes down and shoots him from the side. And the gun goes off when she shoots him. He just misses the guy's head. His head, like, barely, right? So if he was aiming, you know, or I guess, you know, his hand probably jerked a little bit. I don't fucking know about reaction time and shit if you get shot. I've always actually wondered, like, when there's a standoff, could you surprise, like, do you, like, would you shoot quick enough if you got shot? Like, don't bullets go pretty fast? I don't know. Like, if I shot first, would you shoot me? Like, is the first person who shoots gonna win that? I don't know. I've never tried. So I've always wondered that.
I'm not about to find out.
Here, they're arguing, at least, that it would go off. Just, I guess, like, that's, like, the whole guy said Greedo Han thing, too. Anyway, I think, like, his face there showed that he was, like, whoa, like, not, and also, I think part of that was, like, he genuinely didn't want to have to kill the Empire guy.
Yeah.
Like, he's not trying to murder people. I think if he got his hands on someone who, like, he really felt like was in charge of doing the dirty work, he might be, like, not only, like, down to kill them, but, like, he might shoot him in the knee first, even. You know, who knows? I don't know, but I think he's above that, like, if he thinks it's, like, a top guy, like, but I definitely think that he might have some empathy for the grunts, if that makes sense, because he fought a war that he found out he was fighting the people that weren't even, you know, he mentions that in episode 3, is it? Or no, 4, I think it's 4, when he's getting dropped off by the planet. So I think he might have a little bit of empathy for grunts, and, like, for if that character actually was a stormtrooper, I think he might have empathy for that, and we've seen how, further down the line, characters can get brainwashed into that, obviously.
I do think there is a lot of empathy between these characters. I just think a lot of the heavy lifting for that relationship is done with Diego Luna's facial expression in moments like that. Like you said, he's such a good actor that, like, stuff that is not even, like, maybe in the script can be conveyed, you know, just through his eyes. I didn't feel like there was a lot in the script other than a couple times when they talk about Nimic Manifesto and gadgets and stuff like that, that really solidified a relationship between them. But I'm glad you brought that moment up because it's definitely one where you can see it in Cassian's eyes, and also just like trauma bond. Like, they went through this whole heist together. And like Nimic said in episode 5, you're my ideal reader. So it makes sense in episode 6 for him to be like, well, if I'm dead, I want my manifesto to go to my ideal reader because he's powerful and he's got experience and he's good at this kind of subterfuge thing. Maybe I can sway him so that my goals live on through his actions in the future. So it tracks. Again, I'm just trying to delve deeper and understand some of this stuff because I'm not always going to get it on a first watch. And I think it's there. I love how layered this is, that we can get in and talk about motivations and character relationships and what does this person want and how was that communicated and how did it affect this character. And it's just such good fantasy. I'm fucking losing my mind over it.
Yeah. And going off that, obviously, yes. I mean, I feel like a lot of times when people talk about someone who's a great actor, they talk about them being good at acting with their face, which is probably just inherent in being a great actor. But yeah, I think he's definitely showcasing that. And throughout, I mean, I don't necessarily think Star Wars gets bad actors. I think that sometimes they don't get the best dialogue to work with. But it's, again, I don't want to sound like I'm shitting on Star Wars, but it's not award-winning content.
No.
If that makes sense. The special effects a lot of times are.
Well, this is something that I wanted to mention earlier, if I can just punch in, that the original inspiration for Star Wars was Saturday morning serials, Flash Gordon. It wasn't Lord of the Rings, you know? It wasn't this deep, like, philosophical kind of thing. And the franchise is 40-some years old now. It's expanded a lot. And I think now that kind of stuff, for example, like the Obi-Wan show, like I felt like a lot of the dialogue was kind of like, you know, it was like standard Star Wars stuff. Boba Fett, Mando, the new movies. There's a lot of dialogue and stuff in there that is not like the most groundbreaking shit you've ever heard, but it's like good enough and it has its place. But when you get something that is a little more deliberate, it feels like something you'd see in, you know, quote unquote, I hate to use like real cinema type shit. You know what I mean? Like I'm not, everyone everyone knows my stance on Star Wars. I'm not hating on it at all. It is refreshing and it makes you want more from the other stuff.
Yeah, and to the point, I do think even when sometimes the dialogue isn't great, they generally have good actors, if not great actors. And I mean, Pedro Pascal is the first example of the newer stuff that comes to mind. That's not detracting from any of the other actors. I mean, Tamara has been playing that role for a while now, not actively, but he has been in that role for, you know, close to 2 decades now, probably.
Yeah, since Attack of the Clones came out in 2002.
Oh, yeah. But in this show, it maybe feels like they're able to showcase it more, and I think it's standing out in this. And Diego Luna gets the most to play with, obviously, but I think just everyone top to bottom is really doing a great job. And some of the actors I've seen before, Skarsgård, obviously, Alex Lawther, you mentioned earlier, Gardner, and I've seen him, I think, only just in that one Black Mirror episode that he's in, but obviously he's done other, I'm not looking at his page right now on IMDb, but I'm sure he's been in plenty of other stuff. But top to bottom, from faces I recognize and faces I don't, I think great job. But I did want to mention that we were talking about Cassian's motivations and his caring for other characters and who he does care for and who he doesn't, and how potentially I think that maybe he even has empathy for the more grunt-like characters of the Empire and understanding how they could get drawn into something. I also think that the mole that they have within the Empire, I'm forgetting his name as well. I'm really bad with names in general, but Star Wars doesn't make it easy. It's not like Jeff. It's something weird, probably.
Yeah, it's, I think it's Gorman.
Okay, that's actually a more normal one, so maybe I should be able to remember that. But anyway, that character, I think, does also still have empathy for the grunts that he looks over. I don't know if maybe I'm reading too much into that there, but I think that they're kind of showing us that he realizes as well that not everyone's calling the shots. And again, I don't always want to like sound like I'm just going to confess to being an evil person. Like, oh, you pushed me this far. Like, if you put me in Saw, like, I'll kill the other guy. But if it came down to it, I'm living in the Star Wars world. The Empire is taking over. They're like clearly doing it in charge now. Even if I'm very aware of the fascist nature and whatnot and all the other awful things that they do, if it came down to like becoming a prisoner or getting kicked out of my planet or them mining all the resources and me being poor or getting a cushy job working for them, I'm not saying I would kill civilians. Like, if they asked me to do that, I'd be like, all right, I'm out now. But if I was just had to like man like a station, you know, maybe press a couple buttons or, you know, hold the gun and pretend to go pew pew pew. The point being, I do think that I get maybe the point of view that I think I'm seeing in these characters that maybe I'm projecting, but both those characters I think are a little bit, if not empathetic, understanding at least of the position that these lower level Empire workers, might not be the right word, but soldiers also doesn't necessarily feel like the right word, because it's almost a mix, because it's almost like a business army. I mean, it's the government, it's everything. They're, it's, again, it's like this all-encompassing thing run by essentially one guy at the top, really, who's pulling all the strings and has orchestrated this, as we saw in the prequels, to great effect and with many steps and a lot of pre-planning. So,
well, that's something that I've seen people talk about in regards to this show, is it shows the everyday, banal, mundane operations of how a fascist state like this works. You know, like if you were just some random officer in Nazi Germany, I'm sure it was really easy to just get along and go to your post and send these propaganda messages out on the airwave and go home, and it was just a 9-to-5, you know? But that's still like an indispensable part of the machine. And they need you to be bored to get away with everything else that they're doing. Nimick says, like, it's easier to hide behind 40 atrocities than a single event. Like, if you keep the pace up and everything is happening so fast that no one has time to pay attention to any of it all, and they just focus on whatever they've got going on their day-to-day, it's relatively easy to commit all this crazy crimes and oppression, because you've broken it down so much. Everyone has such an individualized role in it that it becomes boring. And that's how the Nazis were able to accomplish so much, is that they were fucking nerds. And it was a lot of spreadsheets and numbers and stuff like that. And yeah, you just individualize it and bada bing, bada boom.
And I have to say this now, because I want to be very clear. I'm not saying I would have joined the Nazis in Nazi Germany. So I'm going to make this argument right now. And my point is that I think it's a little different, where I think like a guy who joined the Nazis is worse than a guy who joins the Empire, because World War II, obviously this is way before our time, and I'm not a historian. I don't know a lot about a lot of stuff. So if I say anything dumb, please stop me. But there was a point, I think at least, where yes, it was close to Germany might take over the world, or at least that portion of the world not broken up by water, if they had, for example, succeeded in Russia. I mean, I don't know. That's my take, at least like the super baseline. But even then, we have world powers that obviously could beat them, because they did beat them, right? The Allied forces ended up winning, just in case anyone was curious. But because the quote unquote universe for us now and then in the 40s as well is just Earth. There's no galactic empire, because there's no other planets that we found yet that we have had contact with. Obviously, this is nothing new, but this is just a basis for my point here. So I think joining the Empire would be like if Nazi Germany had taken over the world already. Like, they controlled Earth. There was no other army to fight them.
Yeah.
The only people who could fight them would be guerrilla rebels, which is what obviously the rebellion is in Star Wars.
Right.
It's like, you joined a little too early, I feel like. It's like, all right, things weren't that dire. You kind of maybe were a little bit in on them if you were, it's like just doing my job type thing. My point is that at a certain point, I think the self-preservation kicks in and it's like, all right, like they've killed the entire town already. Like my last, like I can either like get killed right now or like sign up for stormtrooper duty. It's like, I get that guy signing up for stormtrooper duty, if that makes sense. In the Star Wars universe.
Yeah, no, I completely get your point.
There's no USA that could join the war and help you out to beat the Empire.
When you have been broken, when you've been completely demoralized and you really have no feasible options to turn to unless, you know, somebody like Luthen happens to wander in and smuggle you off somewhere to do something. I mean, yeah. Are the townsfolk of Varix complicit because they're just living their lives and they're not actively fighting against the Empire? You know, not necessarily.
Right, exactly. And on top of that, it's like, not to get too literal and take the franchise too seriously, but again, I'm looking at it from the point of view where this series is taking a little more of a realistic point of view from it. It's a little more, again, not to shit on the rest of it, but quote unquote real cinema. It looks like a regular TV show, not like a Star Wars or Marvel TV show, which have a little bit of a different look.
It's filmed outside on locations.
Right. It's not on the volume completely. Exactly. Which again, I enjoy the other shows. I will complain sometimes if I think it's not well done, but I'm going to keep watching all the Star Wars shows. So like, don't take everything I say with a grain of salt. I'm not sitting here like actually like shitting on it. Like we said, everyone knows our stance. We enjoy it even if we do see some flaws sometimes. But because we're looking at it like realistically, and because I'm now like trying to analyze, oh, like, do they have empathy for these grunt type characters, the lower level Empire workers or soldiers, like we said, because we're trying to analyze that, and I'm saying that I can see where they're coming from. I think that, for example, if you are on a planet where you've never seen the Force used, right, there's no proof, I guess, of the Force, and we see it, and it's kind of joked about, but in episode 4, the original Star Wars, is it Tarkin, or I think it's someone else, actually. I think it's another Imperial higher up.
I don't remember if it's Grand Moff Tarkin.
Anyway, it doesn't matter who it is, but Tarkin or someone else questions things like, oh, no one cares about your silly space wizard magic stuff, or whatever the line is. You guys, everyone knows what I'm talking about. It's joked about sometimes. It's like, hey, what? This guy was just a teenager who overthrew this. This was not very long. You know what I mean? Obviously, it was Luke's lifespan is the amount of time that had passed.
Yeah, and also in Clone Wars, Tarkin straight up gets saved by Jedi, so.
Okay, so I didn't even know that. So it's like silly, but whatever. But we have, based on that, we have proof that there is precedent for people not buying the Force fully. So if you've never seen evidence of it, you're on an outer reach or more outer reach type system. In your opinion, why would you think that the Empire would ever get overthrown? Because without the Force, without that, this is a story that obviously it's a movie, but in real life, the Empire doesn't come out of power without the Force. You know what I mean? No one's pew-pewing the tiny little box that Rogue One did explain, but that's not happening in a real life situation. So then it's even, if you look at it from that point of view, I think it's even more understandable where a person would be like, okay, this is really like an apocalyptic scenario where it's do or die and I will die because they will just kill me if they don't like how I act. And again, you can take two different routes with working within the system and just, you know, trade and follow their rules or smuggle under their rules because I think they look the other way for certain things, for example. You could take that route or you could just, you know, work for them too. And I think that both those are, again, not making you evil. The whole point, I know it's a long-winded way to get to it, but the whole point is that I can see where they might be coming from if I'm reading it correctly, where I think both these characters do have empathy for these lower level Empire workers because it's kind of just the best option for them at this point for some of them, right? Where they might end up in a situation where they're just screwed if they don't.
Yeah, a lot of folks are like Cyril. And Cyril, I think, is going to be an interesting arc too, where it's like they live in like a shitty apartment and their mom berates them all day and they want to get away and try and do something that they have been told is meaningful. And the only thing that's offering them a way to do that is the Empire, by joining up in the service. So that's what they do. And it's tragic. They ultimately, a lot of them end up doing some horrible shit because they have been conditioned to believe that that is the right thing to do. Really, really interesting dissection of how authoritarian regimes and fascist regimes operate and convince people to further these goals that are ultimately not for the good of the people.
These goals?
Damn, you got me. I got caught, folks.
So if you've watched the episodes, you know what happens. We've talked about it. It's a heist. They set up the heist, the planning kind of stage in episode 5. We reference one of my favorite parts where he was telling them who shoots righty, who shoots lefty. And when he was firing off righty, 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 I was like, all right, you better throw another lefty in there because at a certain point, he should just be like, everyone else is a righty. And the last person was like, like righty, but he favors left when he shoots, which I thought was also, I was like, okay, cool. This is dumb. Like, it's not like a detail that even really matters, but I was like, all right, like that to me feels like, again, like writing with care. It's like, again, it's such a stupid little thing, but it's a way to make that seem more organic. You're switching it up an extra time because there's left and there's right. But you know, everyone knows like a guy who writes right-handed, but then bats lefty, something like that. You know what I mean? Or throws righty and bats lefty.
Yeah. Well, when you've been eating out of the trough for so long, if you put it on a plate, then it feels fancy.
Right. I get what you're saying. Okay. It took me a second. Right. Yes. That one maybe was the most critical we've gotten of Star Wars so far.
It's not an original thought. I stole that from fellow Homestead of.
But yeah, we've touched on that. So is there any like detail of the heist that we really need to go over, you think? I mean, I know we went really broad here.
I just think the eye looked super fucking cool. I think it was a great set piece. I don't really have anything else that I want to like dig into. I just love the themes in this show so far, and I'm excited to review the next 3-episode batch.
Yeah, I agree. And I hope that you guys, our audience, are enjoying the presentation, the style that we're going over with this, because I think that, in my opinion, I liked that discussion that we just had. I know we didn't, again, like break down the plot, but we're now going into this assuming that you guys have all seen it. We gave you the spoiler warning at the beginning. You've seen both episodes 5 and 6. You've seen the first 4 as well. We don't need to tell you all the plot details. We can kind of just tell you how we feel about what we've seen and where we're going. So if you hate it, if you want us to like go back to a little bit more of a structured discussion, like I said, let us know. We're always open to suggestions, criticisms, anything. We want to hear your feedback. But like I said, I thought it went pretty well. Hope you guys agree. But now we are going to end this episode with our final thoughts and our ratings. We do at the end of every episode. You remember this. But we're going to do it a little differently now, obviously, because we have talked about 2 episodes today, 5 and 6. What we could do is we could give you a 5 and a 6 ranking. I don't think that really makes sense. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to actually bring episode 4 back into it. We've already given a rating for episode 4 as a solo episode, but we're going to now just give our rating out of 10 of this 3-episode arc, because that's what we're trying now. We're going to go forward doing this. So we're going to let you know what we felt about episodes 4 through 6 right now by giving you our final thoughts and our rating of the 3-episode arc out of 10. Gardner, how you feeling?
I feel great. Like I said, I felt like this arc was a step up from the previous arc. I don't really know what else I can say that I haven't already said in this episode. So much stuff to love here. This is the Star Wars I've been wanting. I am going to give the Haldani heist arc 8.8 eyes out of 10.
All right. Yeah. I told you guys how I feel about this. You've heard how I feel about the first 4. So nothing really new to say here. I'm just going to reiterate that I think we're on the up and up. 4 was my favorite when it came out. 5 was my favorite when it came out. And now 6 is my new favorite. So that's what you want in a show, right? Again, not shitting on the first 3 when I say that, but it has just gotten better. And I don't know how I would rank 1 versus 2 versus 3 because I watched them all together. And like I said, if you listen to that episode, I really think they should have just made that a movie. Like, why even break them up? We don't need credits in between each one. It is just one whole thing, but I digress on that. So I really do just think that's a good thing. Like, you want the show to keep getting better. So if it keeps getting better, I'll be happy. I like what we're seeing. I liked what I was seeing at the beginning. So it getting better only means I'm even happier. Great acting, like I said. And like I keep saying, and I think the biggest sticking point for me is it really does feel like the show has been given the most care and attention to it in the production phase of it, and the setup, even down to, like we said, the sets, which other people are mentioning too. So I'm actually going to let Gardner's score affect mine, because I was stuck between 2. I didn't know, do I want to give it this score? Do I want to give it this score? And based on his, I'm going to give it a different one, because 8.8 was one of the options I was going to give it. But instead, I am going to say that I think it was even better than you, Gardner. I'm going to give it 8.9 sci-feists out of 10.
Yes.
I know it's a fantasy, Gardner. I know. I get it, but give me this one, all right?
I was just appreciating it.
I know.
It was a good pun.
Thank you. Hey, I was getting defensive. That's what we call the lady doth protest.
I don't know. This show feels more sci-fi than fantasy, which is weird. I know that Star Wars was invented as a fantasy, but it's the kind of world where you can do both genres.
Yes, I agree. This one does lean more into it, because the fantasy aspect is more like the Jedi part of it, in my interpretation, at least, of it.
Yeah, which isn't here in this show.
Right, which is what people, is one of the things people like about it. And we don't need that in everything. But that's that. We hope you guys enjoyed it. That was Andor episodes 5 and 6. Like we said, directed by Susanna White, who also directed episode 4. She did that entire little arc that we just covered. And we didn't shout out any of the actors, but I did mention at the beginning of our review of episode 4 that if you listen to our review of the first 3 episodes, we went over the entire cast in that episode, and we're not going to do that each time. But shout out to them, because they did do a great job in both these episodes and in everything so far. I have to just shout out, I think top to bottom, everyone's done well, but the acting for sure, I think, has stood out more so than even the good acting in other shows. So with that being said, we hope you guys enjoyed this, and we will be moving on to, like I said, a recap of 7, 8, and 9. So we'll be taking off the next 2 weeks for this bonus miniseries. We'll have full-length episodes in the meantime, but stay tuned for, like I said, the recap of Andor episodes 7 through 9, coming out the week that episode 9 drops on Disney Plus. So thanks for listening to this episode, folks. We appreciate you guys making it all the way to the end. We appreciate our new listeners as well as all of our recurring listeners. Thank you. If you are a new listener and you don't know where to find us, we're available on any podcasting platform at GDT. You just search those three letters, GDT, Good Day 2, Talk About Movies, and you'll find us. You can subscribe to us, even leave a 5-star review if you want. You don't have to do that, but if you do subscribe, you'll never miss an episode. You can stay up to date, and you can also check out our back catalog of over 80 episodes. We have tons of interviews, awesome stuff, as well as Star Wars recaps, MCU stuff, indie stuff, recaps of older movies, more recent movies. Should be something for everyone. So if you like this, check out our old stuff by searching the letters, like I said, GDT on any podcasting platform, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, most of the free ones. If you can't find us on the free app that you listen to and you want to find us there, send us a message and we'll get us on there ASAP. Other than that, you can also find us on social media, on Twitter and Instagram at GoodDataPod and on Facebook at GDT Podcast. We post stuff there. But if you subscribe to us on the podcast platform that you listen to on, that's the most important thing, because then you'll never miss an episode. That's all for this week, folks. Like I said, we hope you enjoyed it. Thanks for listening. We will talk to you again next week.
As always, thanks for tuning in, folks. We love you, and we'll see you on the next one.